Blog Talk Radio.
Round one. Fight. Welcome, Earthlings. You have stumbled across the number one internet sports talk show in the world. We do this thing called The Balance every Saturday morning. And welcome to all of our affiliate radio stations who are listening to us in their car and on their apps or wherever you're listening to us across the United States. Welcome. My name is Tom Marquis. I am your host for the next 2 hours. You will pay homage to me because I am El Presidente, and I will guide you through this crazy world of sports. And it does not get any crazier than it does in the month of March, does it? So we're going to spend a lot of time today dissecting, looking at the upsets, looking at what's going forward. I know Rick Riggin is down in Nashville. We hope that we're going to be able to connect with him. However, he is down in Nashville for the NCAA first round. And so it's a hard maybe. We'll put it that way. Joining us also in a few moments, standing by in the Balance Green Room, Matthew Embry, our official IndyCar contributor, going to talk a little bit about that big upset last night, Virginia, and IndyCar, of course, certainly had a really good opening race out in St. Pete, and we've got a couple weeks before they're back on the track again out in the desert in Phoenix. Also, Mo from the BS Sports Show going to join us later on, help us break down this March Madness. Yeah, pretty much March Madness. But Steve Wilson from Speedway Digest is also going to join us here in about a half hour or so and talk with us about that West Coast swing with NASCAR out there in Cali this weekend. See what's going on there. Big sponsorship changes there in NASCAR. And also, it involves beer and it involves a home improvement store. You do the math. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. We'll be right back right after this on the Balance Radio Network.
My doctor told me to reduce stress at work, so I come to Buffalo Wild Wings to eat lunch and watch sports. I get to pick one of seven entrees, like sandwiches and salads, plus one of seven sides.
Well, I like sides.
It's so affordable, I can finally take a vacation.
Where are you going to go?
Here, Tim, here.
Introducing the new B-Dubs Fast Break Lunch Menu, starting at a new low price. Dine in or order takeout weekdays between 11 and 2. Participation and availability may vary. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
It's double trouble, double the fun at African Safari Wildlife Park in Port Clinton, Ohio. See the largest antelope on Earth, the giant eland, and the ugliest creature on Earth, the African warthog. There's so much to see and do, including the Midwest's only drive-through safari. Feed the animals, see live educational shows, feel the excitement. Have your picture taken with a python or cockatoo. Feel the adventure. Shop the Symbol Lodge gift shop with items available from around the globe. Visit the snack bar or picnic facilities. Enjoy a pony or camel ride.
Or cheer your favorite porker on to victory in the famous pork chop down.
Bring your family to see the rare and exotic animals at African Safari Wildlife Park in Port Clinton, Ohio.
Just take Route 2 to the Route 53 North exit and follow the sign.
Only 17 miles west of Cedar Point via Route 6. Open every day, rain or shine.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything.
Here we go.
For the first time in 13 years, the Eagles are headed for the Super Bowl.
All right, and welcome back to The Balance. Well, hey, you know what? It's okay to still remember the Eagles going to the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, I pushed the wrong button there, but that's okay. Welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis. Joining us now is our official IndyCar contributor from at Open Wheel, popular at openwheel.com. Joins us, going to be talking a little IndyCar, but also some March Madness. Welcome to the Madness, sir. Matthew, how are you on a St. Patrick's Day?
Hard to believe what happened last night, Tom, but this is what makes the tournament fun. I mean, my bracket's ruined now, but look at it from this sense. You just cannot take anything for granted in the NCAA tournament. I think Virginia just got a tough love lesson about that last night. I mean, remember, the same Virginia team that 3 decades ago lost to Chaminade, with Ralph Sampson, they were number one team in the country. And now they've done it again against a Maryland-Baltimore County team that is outside the top 200 of the NCAA in offensive efficiency. I mean, they say defense wins championships, but you got to have offense. And this Virginia team was just out to lunch all night long last night, just showed no urgency. And even when they were in trouble, they showed no urgency until it was too late. I think right now, I mean, I compare what happened last night. This is right on the level of Michigan losing to Appalachian State in football several years ago. I mean, this is one of those that just, you could replay it multiple times, Tom, and it just will not happen. I mean, I'm still perplexed that a team that was this dominant, defeated Duke, North Carolina, rolled through the ACC tournament, and now this happens. I feel real bad for everyone in Charlottesville today. I cannot explain how in the world a team that looks so dominant just falls apart like this and loses by 20 to a team that at the start of last year was predicted to finish dead last in the America East Conference. I mean, it's unfathomable what's happened here. I mean, kudos to UMBC and all the folks down there. Obviously, they're on cloud nine this morning, but how can you feel, you know, anything but, you know, a little bit of disappointment and, you know, a little bit of pain for everyone in Charlottesville because they did not expect their tournament to end in such a horrific way like it did last night?
Well, absolutely not. But, you know, and I know you picked Virginia on the show last week. You said Virginia to go all the way. So I know that your bracket is all busted up. I have to admit, though, I did pick Virginia to make a run. Even to the Final Four in most of my brackets, but did not pick them in any of my championship games except for one bracket. So I survived the storm. The other storm that happened this week happened on Thursday night. And that was Arizona State. Sean Miller can get to what he's got to get to for the offseason. It's going to be a rough offseason for him. You know, I realize they've had a lot going on as a team. I realize that Sean Miller has had a lot going on as a head coach personally and professionally. I get it. I understand. But at the same time, Arizona State has never really done that well in the tournament. But Buffalo had their way with
Arizona State.
You mean just
Arizona, not Arizona State?
I mean just Arizona, not Arizona State. My fault. Thank you for correcting me. My coffee still hasn't kicked into my brain yet this morning. So, you know, I promise you I haven't started on the green beer yet. So, yes, regular Arizona. But, yeah, it's been a great – and then, of course, we saw Loyola of Chicago in that buzzer beater against Miami. So we've seen – and we saw Wichita get shocked themselves – by Marshall, the first time Marshall's ever won an NCAA tournament, going to be meeting up with Virginia. And, of course, great wins here locally, Purdue and Butler. Of course, Purdue's going to be without big man Isaac Haas. We're going to get into all of that as we dissect throughout the show. And, Matt, you're welcome to stay with us throughout the entire show if you want to. But I do want to get to some IndyCar. Last week, IndyCar opened up their IndyCar season down in St. Pete. Great race it was. Recap for us.
Well, Sebastian Bourdais got the victory, but I think the person that really got the short shaft was Robert Wickens. For being his first open-wheel race since his Formula Renault days almost over a decade ago, and him almost winning it was a big deal. And I think it shows that Schmidt-Peterson did the right thing tearing down the team. Lena Gade, Pierce Phillips, they now have leaders on that technical staff behind the scenes that can get them to the front. Obviously, Honda's improved their game immensely elsewhere besides the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Now the question in my mind is, with what happened here, is how does Team Penske, who was out to lunch after Will Power had his issue with Wickens on lap one, how does Team Penske and the other Chevrolet teams respond? Because they were clearly a beaten group after St. Pete. Now, granted, Phoenix, I think, has gone well for them, but after what happened this past weekend, you got to wonder how the Chevrolet teams are going to put up with the rest of the season, because they can't afford to have such a lackluster. Now, granted, they had some moments of their own. I mean, and all of them fell by the wayside early with Matthias Less hitting the wall, Jordan King having his problems, and obviously Will Power having his problems. But at the same time, though, Honda just gave them a good old-fashioned whooping last Sunday. Now, there's something that obviously can be fixed down the road, but, you know, it's a tough thing for Wickens. I'll be very curious to see how he bounces back at Phoenix, considering he has no oval experience. And then Bourdais, Dale Coyne Racing, I think they've proven that it was not a fluke last year. Now, granted, they took advantage of, you know, Wickens and Rossi clashing late there, but a strong performance by Coyne, and even with some unknowns about that second seat of revolving door with Clayman DeMello and Fittipaldi sharing it. Fittipaldi takes his turn this upcoming race at Phoenix. Coyne, I think, once again, assuming disaster doesn't strike them again, I think Bourdais is once again a championship contender for the Verizon IndyCar Series title and the Astra Cup.
Right, absolutely. And it does appear that we are having some issues with our live streams. I'm trying to get that fixed, so if we lose our live stream, I do apologize for that. It will be up on the podcast as well. So as we go forward and we look forward into Phoenix coming up in April, what are your thoughts, sir?
Does Penske bounce back? Does Voigt show the momentum they showed early and they're able to turn set in the race and save Fred Carpenter? The Chevrolet teams, I think, are going to be put to the test again. Now, granted, the short ovals, Penske had the advantage, but where were the other Chevrolet teams? So I think right now, is Penske got to carry the torch for Chevrolet again, or was one of the other teams going to be able to step up? Because if you go by what happened at St. Pete, and obviously last year at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Honda has an edge right there. Now the question is, could Chevrolet put a dent into it right now? That's the big question that's on my mind right now looking ahead. And, I think this is a situation where even though Ganassi disappointed at St. Pete, I think this is a perfect place for them to bounce back in Phoenix with Scott Dixon, if not Ed Jones. Now that one race under Ganassi and the pressure of being the new guy is off, we'll see what Ed Jones can do when we head to Phoenix coming up in April.
Okay, are you still with us?
Yep.
Okay, I apologize. We did lose our live stream. I am not sure exactly what happened there. But nonetheless, we're going to keep moving forward as we get ready for the podcast as well. Talk with us a little bit about some of the struggles that we're seeing here with IndyCar. It seems like we had a lot of communication problems last week down in St. Pete.
I think that's just some new things with the brand new car and obviously some of the new systems that are in there. I mean, it's nothing too out of control. Now, granted, there's also a brand new race director and Kyle Novak. So I think those little issues will be fixed and that should not be an issue. I don't think that was one of the bigger issues that was in play considering from what I saw.
So looking forward to Phoenix. Talk with us a little bit about the Phoenix track. I know we got a couple weeks, but what are teams got to do to prepare for Phoenix? As we know, it's a completely different track than St. Pete.
High-speed oval. It'd be very interesting to see what they do about trying to put a second groove in there. There's talked about them artificially putting down some rubber on the second groove and having the guys work there to see if they could improve passing there and side-by-side racing. I'm not sure if that's necessarily a great thing for a short oval, but we'll see if that works out for them. And like I said, Chevrolet's got a lot of proving to do if they want to bounce back and become a factor in this equation.
Go ahead, Matt. You cut out there in the very last part there, sir.
I think ultimately you look at the scenarios ahead right now, and certainly, like I said, Chevrolet's got proving down, and Honda's got the upper hand right now, and I think that you see that with my Indy 500 Gravitology list. For instance, I put Stefan Wilson back in the field at 33. Matthias Lace has moved up. Robert Wickens moved up. And now my last three out are still Pippa Man and Buddy Lazier, but Kyle Kaiser, I think, is right now the odd man out, and Junkos, they were way off the pace compared to the rest of the field. Rene Bender, yes, his first race, but remember, he's defending Formula Renault champion, so he shouldn't be that far off the pace. And but again, that's the danger when you're a brand new team. You come in with a driver with no experience in the top rank. You set yourself up prone for problems. And Ricardo Juncos, I mean, he doesn't want to run two cars at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but I think now he's going to struggle just to get one in the field at this point, Tom, because based on Rene Bender's performance, the news for Juncos is not looking good as we draw closer to the month of May.
So kind of a sidebar, side note story here that we saw this week. A.J. Foyt was attacked by African killer bees at his ranch out in Texas. What do we know about that?
AJ's got to be a little more careful. I think that's what it is. I think it's just the daredevil side of him just getting a little bit too crazy right now. There's been issues with killer bees ever since they escaped from, I guess, some Central American lab several years ago. I mean, there was a big mess in Arizona, I think, like several years ago, where thankfully no one was seriously injured or killed, but there's a lot of, you know, animals like that were eliminated because of that. It's just one of those things you got to be prepared for. I mean, things fall out where the sun falls out of orbit, and it looks like, fortunately, Foyt's going to make a full recovery. The only thing I question now is he going to be able to make the trip over to Indianapolis this May? Because it would be tough not being at the Speedway and not being there, even though not necessarily in a place where he can mingle with the media or anything. That's something, of course, he doesn't do much anyway. But for him not to be there, it would be tough for a bunch of, you know, the traditionalist, nostalgic IndyCar fans like yours truly.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I want to refer you to a motorsport.com article. Ray Hall admits that Ray Hall Letterman Racing was fooled by Sebring IndyCar testing. What are your thoughts on that article? Or did you get a chance to read it?
Well, they were fast, but again, testing is not a good base. I mean, there are certain teams that are sandbagging. There are certain teams that are not going out for full-out speed. And I think it is very childish if you go by testing numbers to determine where you stand. Because until you get to that first practice session at St. Pete, you really do not know where you stand. Because, again, the agendas for some teams is not full-out speed and going, you know, for the fastest laps possible. And maybe it was for Rail Letterman. Maybe it wasn't for a majority of the teams. And I think you get a false sense of confidence when you have that scenario. I mean, Penske was quick in testing in 1995 at Indianapolis, and look where it led to them. They failed to qualify. So you can't just go by a testing timesheet because not all the teams are there. Not everybody is going for full-out speed, comfortability, getting used to the brand-new car. And you just can't go by, you know, a timing sheet and a test to say where you stand until you get actually to the actual race weekend. So you got to be careful when you look at those things thinking you have the upper hand, because sometimes you get this false sense of security when you really don't have anything. And I think Ray Hall is a victim of that, and maybe now teams will look at that and say, well, if I'm faster than the test, I mean, Foyt had that last year at Gateway. Everyone's thinking Foyt was going to dominate at Gateway after the test where they topped the timesheets. And even though, yeah, they finished fifth, they were never a factor for the win. So you've got to take that with a grain of salt when you see those test sheets come up, because, again, the agendas are not necessarily the fastest lap possible.
What a great win it was for Sebastian Bourdais last week. I mean, and you and I both were here in Indy when he had that horrific accident and, you know, put him out for the rest of the season. And there was even doubt that he would even be able to come back to IndyCar. And for him to come back and get in the car in the first race of the season to get a win, that's got to be pretty impressive and pretty huge to him.
The fact that he was competitive, I think, was impressive in itself. Made the same charts to the field like he did a year ago. And then, like he was there, was in the right position, the right time to take advantage when Rickens and Rossi decided to clash with two laps to go. So, big day for Bourdais. Now the question is, can they keep the momentum going? I think they could do it. Now, let's just hope that Lightning doesn't strike twice and they have another issue like that where their chances are altered again. Very curious to see, because remember, they had the fastest practice times at Indianapolis, and they were a favorite looking into qualifying. So if they could back that up again, who knows what we might see when we get to the month of May for Dale Coyne Racing, a team that has been eager to break through and not be the lovable losers anymore. Maybe this will finally be the year they do it.
Let's talk a little bit about some testing out in Texas. We had some high winds, low temperatures, and a hard crash by Indy 500 champion Tomoko Soto led to the handful of Verizon IndyCar Series teams testing in Texas to pack up early on Thursday, and that was AJ Foyt Racing, Andretti, Chip Ganassi, Dale Coyne, Ed Carpenter, Ray Hall Letterman, and Schmidt Peterson, and Team Penske, all in the 1.5 high banked oval. Thoughts?
I think it just concludes the question right now. Maybe we shouldn't be running at Texas anymore. You know, CART had issues, and with this new car, the faster it's going to get, I wonder if these drivers are going to be able to, you know, stay fully awake through a tire fuel stint and, you know, a 600-kilometer distance. I think hopefully I'm wrong about that, but I think right now, even though Eddie Gosch has been good to IndyCar, I think maybe this is start time where IndyCar seriously questions whether or not they keep racing at a place like Texas. And maybe this is a place where they start looking at trying to create ties with Michigan Auto Club. They need to get on bigger tracks that have a little more room to work if they're going to make this work. I think Texas is too fast and too tight a track for the drivers to be able to withstand. I mean, the G load is extremely high there. And I'm starting to wonder, are we going to get to the numbers like we did at CART when they tried to race there in 2001? It just got too much for the drivers. I hope I'm wrong about that. But again, you got to be careful what you wish for, especially last year when we had a crash fest and only six cars made the finish.
Absolutely. You know, one of the exciting news that came out of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this week is that the Indianapolis Motor Speedway has announced that it will build a new premium viewing area outside the very popular Turn 3 and will offer an all-inclusive race day experience for the 102nd Indianapolis 500. The Turn 3 club is being offered in response to increased demand for premium seating and hospitality there at IMS. Suites are sold out for the Indianapolis 500, while limited availability still remains in the Hallman Terrace. So this is a great opportunity, and we're seeing this happen also in Phoenix. They've kind of got their new fan experience. I think the tracks are starting to realize they've got to modernize. They've got to make it more of an experience. And really change things up for the fans. And, of course, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway has always kind of been on the forefront of that. But certainly this is a great opportunity for fans to see the race at a premium level there at the very popular Turn 3.
Yeah, it's a great thing. But I think the thing ultimately is these other tracks, especially the ovals like Phoenix, they've got to sell tickets. I mean, it was an eyesore last year when they were at Phoenix and that Turn 2 grandstand was completely empty. And it was the same way at Texas, a lot of empty seats there. I mean, they got to sell at these oval tracks, and they're going to keep, you know, running at these places. They just can't not run to empty stadiums every time they go to an oval track. I think that's one thing right now. Outside of Indy, yeah, they sell there. But some of these other places, they are having trouble selling, you know, even a decent amount of tickets. I mean, you saw it at Auto Club Speedway the last time they were there. I think only less than 10,000 people showed up. So that's got to be their chief concern for Mark Miles, et cetera, is making these other oval tracks work. And, you know, if they want to continue and increase the number of oval tracks, they got to be able to sell tickets to these places so they can keep up running. I mean, that's been the problem with all these ovals is they haven't been able to sell tickets over the last decade.
Let's talk a little bit more about the race from last week, and let's look at Wickens. What a great job the Canadian rookie Wickens did. But I think a lot of people kind of disagree about the end of that race in St. Pete, in that Wickens was absolutely punted by a driver that should have known better. And the last lap, well, a lot of people are a little disgruntled by the last lap, and to keep control of your car, to hear Alexander Rossi do anything other than take responsibility for losing control of his car is wrong. What say you, sir?
This goes back to Daytona. I was fearing that this was going to set a precedent, what Austin Dillon did to Eric Almirola, and my worst fears were founded this past weekend. Alexander Rossi, I think, unfortunately, what Austin Dillon did is it set the precedent that if you cannot pass a guy cleanly, you have every right to take him out. And I think that is what you saw at Daytona, and sadly, that's exactly what you saw at St. Pete. Again, I said, be careful what you wish for. When you set a precedent like that, everything changes. And I think right now, I hope to God it doesn't happen in Indy, but it could happen at the Indianapolis 500 again as well. I mean, it's just people now, after what Austin Dillon did to win the Daytona 500, they are now saying it's now a win at all costs and everything is okay. And NASCAR really blew it by not reprimanding Austin Dillon for what he did. And now, if Austin Dillon had not done that to Almirola, I do not believe Alexander Rossi would have done what he did to Robert Wickens.
Well, and here's the thing. I think, and I'm not totally positive about this, but I think race control did give a penalty to Alexander Rossi. But the thing about it is nobody knew about it.
They did, but it was only a monetary fine. It was not a position penalty.
Well, either which way, Wickens was having a great race, and I kind of feel like he was cheated out of a win. I could be totally wrong about that. Just one man's opinion, but I was just getting your thoughts on that. So I was going to give IndyCar an A for the first race of the 28th season with the new aero package as planned. But I just think, I don't know. I don't know if there's too much going on in IndyCar where it's hard for everybody to follow on what's going on. But I just feel like we had issues with communication. We had issues with the new aero car. I think there's a lot of kinks and a lot of bugs that's got to get worked out between now and the Indianapolis 500.
And a lot better than I think some of the other things we've got with debuts. I mean, obviously, it wasn't like, you know, the brand new air kits when they had all the contacts and all the yellow flags like they did a few years ago. So at least things went, you know, fairly under control compared to that 2 years ago. But, yeah, it wasn't the perfect race, but it will do. I'd say I give it a B.
So talk with us a little bit about what you're seeing in the stables and the teams and the garages as we wrap up our IndyCar talk before we have to get into our NASCAR talk. And I'll let you go ahead and talk. I've got to try to connect in a different way here with Steve Wilson. So go right ahead, sir.
All right. Big possibilities coming up, you know, with IndyCar with Phoenix. I'll be very curious to see what happens. Obviously, a chance for Penske to bounce back today at Sebring in a couple few minutes from now. With the 12-hour, they have a car on the pole with their brand-new Acura. I'll be curious to see what Cadillac does after they dominated Daytona. They've been a little bit lax here so far at Sebring. Same goes with the Ford and Corvette and GTLM. BMW has gone from worst to first there. They've gone 1-2 in qualifying. And then GTD, Acura looks stout for winning there. So you've got a lot of different scenarios with that event starting here in a few minutes. And but like I said, IndyCar, still things going on. I'd like to see them get close to being able to announce, you know, a brand-new title sponsor for 2019. Mark Miles says that's getting close. We've already got 34 cars for Indy. The momentum is there to take advantage of it, where NASCAR is at a low end, is continuing to lose entries, continuing to lose competitive drive, continuing to lose support. This is where IndyCar needs to be, bring their A game, and bring those NASCAR fans that are now lost from NASCAR and bring them into the IndyCar fold. This is their opportunity to make a name for themselves, and they need to ride that wave of momentum, get a good TV deal for next year, have a great race at Phoenix. If they can do all of those things, you know, Long Beach, Barber, heading up to the Indianapolis 500 and the IndyCar Grand Prix, IndyCar could be a big winner out of this, looking ahead 2 months down the road as we get all closer to the 102nd run of the Indy 500. It's in their court. Now they got to take advantage of it.
Okay, and we're trying to connect with Steve Wilson. Unfortunately, we have to kind of do
0-4-8-1-5-7-5-6-1 is not available.
Okay, we're having some issues with our phone. Matt, are you still there? Matt, are you with us? Well, apparently we're having some issues with our phone, and we're going to try to connect. This has just been a crazy day, hasn't it? We're going to try to connect. With Steve Wilson. My name is Sal Marcos, El Presidente. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Tonight, action from the day to end. Throw it all into bins of shame. Let's set this party on right.
Play it. Put your pinky ring up to the moon. Girls, what y'all trying to do?
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you can save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud.
Steve, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, fantastic. I apologize. We're having issues with Skype. You know how that goes from time to time. So I appreciate you joining us in the unconventional way of getting you on board here. So I appreciate you joining us. We're going to finish with a break. We'll be right back with Steve Wilson from Speedway Digest right here on the Balance Radio Network.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, You know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything.
Bobby, you're here again.
Yeah, my doctor told me to reduce stress at work, so I come to Buffalo Wild Wings to eat lunch and watch sports. I get to pick one of seven entrees, like sandwiches and salads, plus one of seven sides.
Well, I like sides.
It's so affordable, I can finally take a vacation.
Where are you going to go?
Here, Tim, here.
Introducing the new B-Dub Fast Break Lunch Menu, starting at a new low price. Dine in or order takeout weekdays between 11 and 2. Participation and availability may vary. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
It's double trouble, double the fun at African Safari Wildlife Park in Port Clinton, Ohio. See the largest antelope on Earth, the giant eland, and the ugliest creature on Earth, the African warthog. There's so much to see and do, including the Midwest's only drive-through safari. Feed the animals, see live educational shows, feel the excitement. Have your picture taken with a python or cockatoo. Feel the adventure. Shop the Simba Lodge gift shop with items available from around the globe. Visit the snack bar or picnic facilities. Enjoy a pony or camel ride. Or cheer your favorite porker on to victory in the famous pork chop down. Bring your family to see the rare and exotic animals at African Safari Wildlife Park in Port Clinton, Ohio. Just take Route 2 to the Route 53 North exit and follow the sign. Only 17 miles west of Cedar Point via Route 6. Open every day, rain or shine.
All right, and welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Mark Michelle, Presidente, joining us now. And we did lose connection. Unfortunately, we're having some Skype issues. We did lose connection with Matthew Embry. But the good thing is it was right at the end of the segment. So we will reconnect with Matthew next week and talk with him some more IndyCar, March Madness, and what have you. But joining us now is Steve Wilson, our official NASCAR contributor. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty well this morning. How about yourself?
Well, you know it's St. Patty's Day, and I'm ready for some green beer. It's a little early for it, but we're having some Skype issues. But other than that, it can't be near as crazy as what's going on in the March Madness brackets. How about your Florida State Seminoles against the Missouri Tigers?
Well, I picked them, so, it's hard to go against Florida State, number one Virginia got crushed last night.
Crushed is the understatement of the word. Arizona got crushed as well. So the madness is fully underway, continues today as well. So we're really going to be diving knee deep into this, and we're going to try to record a podcast tomorrow too for nothing dedicated to nothing but March Madness. But some madness out west. During the West Coast swing, here we go again, deja vu. We saw Kevin Harvick in victory lane out at Phoenix. Talk with us a little bit about that win. And I tell you what, it was – you know the thing about Kevin Harvick that I've noticed here, and it really became prevalent there in Phoenix, he doesn't have to lead every lap. He can just kind of lay back. He's kind of like a tiger laying low in the woods just waiting for the right time to pounce, and that's exactly what he done. Kevin Harvick, the real deal. You think he can make it four?
I don't know. The last driver to do so was Jimmy Johnson. And, that's been quite some time, a few years ago, that even occurred. Kevin Harvick is seeming like he's on his way to putting this as four in a row. He was fast in one of the qualifying rounds yesterday. However, he's going to end up starting DeBarros Auto Club 400 in 10th place. But I don't think, really that's indicative of a whole lot of things. you know, Kevin Harvick, you know, last week didn't start on the pole either, and he was able to go and you know, take that win. I think a lot of it came down to the fact that, you know, he could put that car where other drivers couldn't, and he just wore drivers down lap after lap after lap after lap. And he just stalked Denny Hamlin for close to a dozen laps or so before, you know, Denny just finally wore his tires out. I mean, Kevin, you know, even though in the stall that he was in, as soon as he got around Denny Hamlin, he was able to pull 1.2 seconds out in front of, you know, second place with relative ease. I mean, the conservation of his tires that he was, you know, that we saw last weekend at Phoenix, and, you know, what he was able to do and just dominating Atlanta. And I think, you know, you have to watch out for him because he's one of those drivers that is very much in the aspect of tire conservation, but still being able to run the driver down, stalk somebody down, and make them, you know, run their tires down just to, you know, keep them from coming back to the front. So, this weekend at Auto Club Speedway, we've got a surface that's been down for, you know, nearly a dozen years or so. And, you know, we're going to be in a similar aspect of the fact that, you know, some of these tires will wear down relatively quickly. If Kevin Harvick can use that to his advantage, I think, you know, we've got a good possibility of maybe going four in a row. But, you know, Kyle Larson is somebody that has won out there at Auto Club Speedway before. He likes that high groove, that preferred line. And, you know, even though that, you know, Kyle Larson, you know, starting a little ways back in third, but I think, you know, between several of them in the top 10, you're going to have to watch out for them. But, you know, Kevin Harvick is, I'm sure, the one to watch no matter what.
You know, let's talk a little bit. You mentioned Jimmy Johnson, and we've talked about Jimmy Johnson a few times as far as him winding down his career. What we saw this week happen with Hendrick Motorsports, and that is that Lowe's Home Improvement has ended their relationship with Hendrick Motorsports, certainly one of the longest-running partnerships in NASCAR history, ironically next to Busch Beer, who's coming back. Why are we seeing such a change? And I understand that it's big money, big sponsors, but do you think that Jimmy Johnson, I mean, Lowe's was kind of attached to Jimmy Johnson, and maybe if we were to read into the tea leaves that they know something that we don't know regarding Jimmy Johnson, so they're ending their relationship with Hendrick Motorsports?
No, I don't think so. You know, Jimmy Johnson has signed through the 2020 season at this point. You know, Lowe's has gone under some major reconstruction of the company many times over. They've moved away from their home base. They've moved down to Morrisville operations. You know, they are, you know, they've got some relatively decline in revenues and whatnot. They've closed some stores, you know, but you know, nowhere near on the scale that we've seen, you know, like a Sears and, you know, Kmart or anything like that. I mean, they're a relatively healthy company at the end of the day. I just think that, you know, Lowe's has been around this sport going back many, many years, back to, you know, when they were based in North Wilkesboro, North Carolina, sponsoring, you know, events at that track, which, you know, NASCAR no longer goes to. So, you know, they have a relatively very long history in the sport that goes back and even precedes, you know, Jimmy Johnson himself. You know, other drivers that have driven a Lowe's, you know, colored car or truck or something of that matter. You know, Mike Skinner did it many, many years ago in the 90s. So, I mean, you know, they've been in the sport for a good amount of time, historical means, you know, right up there in the timelines of a Winston or somebody like that that's been around the sport, was around the sport for about 33 or so years. I just think that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Home Depot, they left out several years ago. They started to cut their sponsorship down a little at the time until they finally just faded away and just, you know, never returned. And they're the number one home improvement, you know, company in America. And I think, you know, for these companies here, they're seeing a dramatic shift away from, you know, the return on investment, the ROI, in NASCAR, even for somebody like Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson hasn't had the best of seasons here in 2018, whether that predicated on them, you know, just finally pulling the trigger and saying, we're not coming back after this year. I don't know. I'm not sure. But I think at the end of the day, you know, the bean counters in these corporations, they value their return on investment, and especially how many people are engaging with the brand, how many people are, you know, there at the track, how many eyeballs are on TV watching, you know, their brand run around the track with, you know, Jimmy Johnson or whoever the driver is. And as these things have continuously declined over the years, you know, these bean counters, they start rethinking their, you know, their involvement into the sport and, you know, how much are they spending in the sport versus how much they're getting in return. And I'm sure, you know, whatever, you know, Lowe's was spending in the sport, whether it's, you know, $35-30 million, you know, as some of these primary sponsorships go for a whole year, I'm quite honest, I'm sure they were getting that back in return. I don't think there was any, you know, them not losing value in the sport, but I think they just saw a trend, the bean counters that, you know, that put these things together, that, you know, they're seeing other people leave the sport. They're seeing how expensive it is to be in the sport. And at the end of the day, they had to make a conscientious decision, not only for their company, but for the shareholders and everybody else around them, to continue either advertising in an industry that, you know, is seeing a decline, or to move somewhere else where they may get a better ROI for a cheaper cost.
Okay, so you're drinking the ROI Kool-Aid. I think a lot of people, especially on social media, and I have to admit that I'm kind of split down the middle there. I know a lot of people on social media become racing experts, become advertising experts, become marketing experts. I get that, and I understand that they're not closed shop like Toys R Us and other stores are doing that. I get that. But at the same time, I find the timing very suspect in the aspect that we're seeing Jimmy Johnson having a rough season. We're seeing Jimmy Johnson getting to that age where retirement might be. And a renewal of a contract, maybe they know that Jimmy Johnson is not going to be there for them through the entire new contract, so they did not renew the contract, and maybe they know something that we don't know. Let's face it, that Hendrick Motorsports, Jimmy Johnson, and Lowe's have a very tight relationship. It would not be beyond comprehension to think that Jimmy Johnson has given a hint to Hendrick Motorsports, who gave a hint to Lowe's Home Improvement, that this is going to be coming down, and they found that this is the perfect time for us to part ways. So there is a lot of people that are raising a few eyebrows about this. So you're saying it's strictly a business decision, and it's nothing that we should be reading into the tea leaves about.
I don't really think so. You know, Johnson has said, you know, on numerous occasions, and even, you know, this weekend, that he, you know, he's going to be around and he's going to finish out at least this 2020 contract. What happens beyond that 2020 contract, I think it's just pretty much anybody's guess. Now, unless, you know, there's something going on that's not being said, and I'm not going to assume anything or, you know, pretend to know anything or start any rumors, but, you know, if there is something in the aspect of, you know, a Dale Jr. type of situation that maybe he may exit out of this contract earlier than expected, then, you know, that'll be news to me, and I'm sure it'll be news to a lot of people out there. And, again, I don't really have any inside information on that. I don't have any rumors, you know, but I'm just using it as a speculatory point of view that, you know, Dale Jr. didn't finish out his contract, and, you know, obviously we know why, but, and Jr. was pretty public about this, but Johnson has, you know, been fairly public in the fact that he intends to finish out this contract, which will run through the 2020 year, so that's about, you know, that's about two and three quarters more seasons or so, and, you know, what happens beyond that, he's not really speculated. I mean, he said that he would be around sport, but he's never said exactly what that means. So I think we just really, at this point, we have to make the assumption that Johnson will stay around until the end of the 2020 season. And then, you know, we'll either have an announcement sometime in that year or prior to that year on what exactly are the next steps for him, whether it's that's taking on a management role like Jeff Gordon has over at Hendrick Motorsports, or whether it's him continuing on for another year or two, or whatever the case may be, or maybe he'll just retire out totally. I mean, there's a lot of things that are going on. Jimmy Johnson is in his 40s. He's going to be in his mid-40s by the time he hits that 2020 year. You know, this hasn't been the best year for him. Last year didn't seem like, you know, he was totally up to par on what we've seen in previous seasons. And I think, you know, if the downward spiral continues, that I do believe that some of this comes down to the fact of, you know, Lowe's knew that he's in the dawn, the twilight years of his career, and maybe it's time for them, or giving the opportunity for them to exit out and let somebody else take that, you know, final few years that, you know, while Johnson has been under that banner since he came into the sport about 14 years ago, maybe it's just, maybe they felt that, you know, the ROI wasn't there, and they weren't going to, you know, it's a business decision at the end of the day. And again, I don't know what they're thinking either, but, you know, I do think that there is some, I think there's some relatively, I can't even speak today. I think there is some, you know, there's something, I think there is some something to it that it has to come down from the business side. I mean, last year, they only did sign for 1 year, and that was for 2018, and they didn't have really many indications that they were looking for anything longer than, you know, 1 year, whereas in years past, it's been multi-year agreements. And I think, you know, if Johnson told them in 2017 that he wasn't going to finish out, then, you know, maybe this was their exit opportunity. But, you know, at the end of the day, maybe it's just, you know, a combination of lots of different things going on between what they feel is important, you know, maybe a little bit financial issues, or, you know, downward financial issues on their side, closing stores and other things. And maybe it's just, you know, maybe everything, the stars aligned, and, you know, they just figured this was their time to exit.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a business decision is a business decision. And it could be a business decision is, hey, Jimmy Johnson is leaving and so are we. That could be the business decision. But you know, here's the thing, that the question that I would have for you, did they just end the contract early themselves, or was their contract ready for renewal and they decided they weren't going to renew? Which one was it?
No, they decided that they weren't going to renew it. In 2017, they signed on just for 1 year.
Okay.
And that was just for the 2018 season. So, yeah, it wasn't them, you know, ending this thing early. It was them not renewing it after that 1 year, which would be the end of 2018, came back up.
Isn't it normal that sponsors, and especially this sponsorship, sign on with the renewal? Like you said, last year they did 1 year. Isn't it typical a 5 year to 7 year type commitment from sponsors like this, and has been around as long as these sponsors have been?
I think they're just answering to the industry and the way the industry has gone. You know, we've gone away from the days of, you know, having one primary sponsor on the car for 38 races, you know, a year. You know, everything from, you know, the duels to, you know, the all-star race and everything in between. You know, we were used to seeing one, you know, sponsor, you know, one company being on that car, you know, for the entire year. You knew that car was never going to change. But the industry has changed to the point that one company can no longer afford or support that. You know, $35, $40 million for some of these teams out there that, you know, when Dale Jr., they, you know, Budweiser, and, you know, all those companies that have sponsored him before, you know, they even, you know, started cutting some things back. And, you know, when Hendrick, you know, announced that, hey, look, you know, I'll field Dale Jr.'s car even if I have to go unsponsored in it, because I'm not willing to, you know, discount my, you know, $30 million price, you know, to put somebody's name on the hood for the whole year, or whatever the case number of races is. I think they just answered to the industry, and the industry has gone away from these primary sponsors that we saw for 38 races a year. Now we're seeing, you know, I've got 10 races with this, and 5 races with that, and 7 races there, and another 10 races here. And, you know, just look at Kevin Harvick, for example. I mean, Kevin Harvick has got Jimmy Johns on there for a portion of the year. He's going to have Busch on there for a portion of the year. mean, he's got others that are, you know, in the pipeline too. So, I mean, I think this is just the way that the industry has gone, and they've, unfortunately, you know, I'll have to say what some others have said. Some of these teams are starting to price themselves out of the market just because of the fact of how much it now costs to run a race team. And these companies just, you know, in this day and age, are not willing to, with the capital outlay of $35, $30 million, $40 million, whatever the case may be, just to, and that's just to put their name on the hood. That's not the sponsorship activation and all the other things that they do that, you know, can run this thing up into the $50, $60 million range. You know, and you know, I don't think companies are willing to do that anymore. I think we've now entered an era where we're going to see, even with somebody like, and we now are with Jimmy Johnson, that even him in the 2019 season will probably have a certain amount of races with one sponsor and another amount with another sponsor. I just don't think we're going to see that anymore with just one company coming on board that I'm going to lay out $50 million a year, whatever the number is, and I'm just throwing a number out. And that's going to be to put my name on the hood and all the marketing and all the activation, everything that comes along with it. You're just not going to see that anymore. And I don't think it's just Jimmy Johnson. It's everybody.
No, I think you're right. And I think what we're going to be seeing is a trend, a change in trends, if you will. And we saw the same thing play out with Matthew Diabeto. I mean, a great feel-good story, but he basically went on social media and said, hey, guys, I got no money to race in Phoenix. And, you know, we talk about the race family being being a family. They ponied up. Denny Hamlin ponied up. You know, others ponied up some money and it helped him to get that sponsorship. So we're going to probably see that happen more than often. And, you know, I don't want to get off into the weeds on the sponsorship deal, but we saw, but on the flip side, we saw a very key anchor sponsor leave. We saw another key anchor sponsor arrive back, and it kind of takes us back to a throwback, if you will, with NASCAR. But Busch Beer is now a sponsor of NASCAR, and we're going to see that play out this weekend.
Yeah, I think you do. And, you know, Busch Beer, again, you know, you've referenced that. And Busch Beer has gone back into the sport way all the way into the 70s. I mean, they at one time were even the Busch Pole, you know, they sponsored that. They were the official beer, you know, the Busch Clash. I mean, go back and look at the Busch Clash. I mean, you know, look at all the things that they've done in the sport. But I think this is their relatively cheaper entry into the sport because, you know, they're not going to be on Kevin Harvick. They've sponsored him for the last couple of years. And, you know, it's not where they're having to come into the sport and they're having to spend that capital outlay, that 50, 60, whatever number it is, you know, to be on somebody's hood for, you know, 38 races a year. But it gives them a little bit here where they can be front and center on somebody's car. But also, they can go the cheaper route, which, you know, and I'm not saying it's cheap by any means because it's not cheap, but it is cheaper, and sponsor something like the Polo Award and become the official beer of NASCAR because that really just wraps up all their marketing and activation all into one, and they really have very little capital outlay aside from that. So I think, you know, we could see potentially, you know, hopefully in the future that we will see maybe somebody like Busch Beer step back up and maybe bring back the Busch Clash once again. You know, Can-Am has a lot of that stuff during the weekend. And, you know, the Clash, you know, Clash at Daytona, which is now Advanced Auto Parts, you know, they've been around for quite some time in the sport. And maybe, you know, Advanced Auto Parts won't come back, you know, for, you know, next year or the year after, and this is Busch's entry back into doing something like that or scaling back up at a reasonable rate instead of just going head in into the sport.
Well, absolutely. Well, let's kind of get into some action, what's going on in the track this weekend. The trucks aren't on the track until next week, but certainly out at the Auto Club Speedway out in California, they finish up their West Coast swing. Let's talk about the Xfinity Series. Obviously, you know, we look at rookie Christopher Bell, Joey Logano, Austin Dillon, Daniel Hemric, Tyler Reddick, Gaz Gralla, I'm sure I just butchered that name, Elliott Sadler, Justin Allgaier, I can't talk either today. Cole Custer and Ryan Reese round out the top 10 out at the Auto Club Speedway for the Xfinity Series this evening.
Yeah, I think it'll be an interesting race at the end of the day. We're going to see a lot. You know, we're going to see a lot not only in the Xfinity race, but we'll see the same things that occur in the Cup race tomorrow. But, you know, these cars can get out and just run flat out straight down the front. Tomorrow we're going to see them pegging in the 210s, you know, 212 area. But we won't see that in the Xfinity race. But we'll see these cars roll up in there into the, you know, the 190s and stuff like that. They're going to go out there. They're going to run 3 and 4. Sometimes we can even see them run 5 wide out there at Auto Club Speedway. And I think this track, you know, as it's sat for the years in that California sun, the pavement has really come into a groove of its own. And it allows these cars not only to spread out, but slip and slide around. You know, we've got, as I alluded to earlier, you know, Carl Larson likes that high line, and there's a lot of highliners that, you know, in the Xfinity series at the same time, too. Christopher Bell is one of them. He comes from the dirt series, so I'd expect somebody like him, so the same as Justin Allgaier, to get up in there in that high groove and, you know, start working some of that. But, you know, the dangers of that at the end of the day is that this pavement is still rather slick to the point where you can slip and slide around. And being up in that high groove, you can smack that wall pretty good, but at least it won't be as hard as if you're running down on that low line. But, I think we'll see a lot of good racing today out there. And we've seen continuously improving racing out at Auto Club Speedway over the years. And I think that's just attributed to the fact of the way that this surface has weathered really in, and it produces really good racing, whether it's the Xfinity Series or the Cup Series.
Well, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the track out at the Auto Club Speedway track. Certainly, a lot of NASCAR drivers are familiar with that track. I do believe that Jimmy Johnson likes to call it his home track, as well as some other drivers enjoy that track as their home track. And certainly, it's a good track to race on, and a lot of drivers like racing out there at the Auto Club Speedway in Fontana. Talk with us a little bit about the track, its makeup, but also what we've got to deal with at that track, being the kind of track that it is we're going to run into some tire issues. And certainly that is something that crew chiefs have to take into account when they put their strategy together for Fontana.
So, yeah, as I already talked about just a little bit, the speeds that, you know, that we'll see run around there later today and even tomorrow, you know, this is one of the fastest tracks that, I mean, you see these cars run flat out on. And again, you know, the surface, you're right. You're going to see some potential tire issues throughout the day, and those come from the aspect of the way that the track has just weathered in and has become rather abrasive over the years, but also it's still slick at the same time, so it gives it a fairly decent characteristic in that fact. So I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of those cars out there that are going to potentially also have some braking issues too, because when you get out there and you're running those flat out speeds that we'll continuously see lap after lap after lap, you know, brake failures haven't been something that, you know, we're not used to seeing at the same time. I mean, you kind of think it's almost like a short track because of the way that these drivers use their brakes to some degree. And, you know, I think at some, you know what, I just can't talk. I don't know what's going on with me today. Some of these drivers out there, I mean, Jimmy Johnson that you've talked about, Kyle Larson, this is also his home track from right up the road. Kevin Harvick is another California driver. Matt DiBenedetto. I mean, a lot of these drivers are starting to come from California. So, yeah, we're seeing a lot of them that they can all consider this their home track on the Cup Series.
Martin Truex Jr. edges out Kyle Busch for the Fontana Cup pole. Here's two very competitive drivers. I think we haven't seen the end of their fierce competitiveness against each other this weekend.
No, I don't think so. I think this is the first opportunity, in my opinion, this year for somebody like Martin Truex Jr. to start collecting up some of those stage wins and stage points. I mean, he did so last year on similar style tracks that are like 1.5 mile intermediate tracks out there. And I think this is could work directly into their wheelhouse, exactly where they need to start picking up some of these points. Because right now, Kevin Harvick has taken everything. I mean, he's got all the points, and he's the guy sitting at the top of the top of the mountain at this point. I mean, he's kind of looks like, you know, Martin Truex Jr. of 2017 every time that there was a stage win or rings. You know, we saw, you know, Martin Truex in victory lane, but this year it's been Kevin Harvick. So it's a little bit swapped, to my opinion. But to that point, it is a place, again, that I think Furniture Row Racing will do very, very well. Martin Truex Jr. will potentially be in the hunt all day long tomorrow for those stage points that collectively picking those up for the end of the NASCAR regular season. And this could be the turning point where we start seeing some domination back out of them once again, because we sure haven't seen it again out of Joe Gibbs Racing this year. But Kyle Busch is also sitting up there too at the same time. So, you know, there's a couple Toyota drivers that you're going to have to watch out for. I think Kyle Busch is always a threat when he's up front. But, you know, Martin Truex Jr. is that methodical driver that's going to drive this race. Like he's looking at the end of the year and not just looking at this race in particular.
Let's talk a little bit about Darrell Wallace Jr. He seems to be going through some challenges. Obviously, he's on a Petty Motorsports is a great team for him as far as mentorship and really helping him come along. And maybe us as fans got really overexcited about Darrell Wallace at Daytona. He's not really lit the world on fire, but certainly let's face it, every driver goes through that phase where they've just got to figure it out. And Petty Racing are going to have some challenges this weekend. As they finish up the West Coast swing, what are some of the things, if you're Kyle Petty, if you're talking to Darrell Wallace Jr. and you're the crew chief and you're talking to Darrell Wallace Jr., or as a team as a whole, what are some of the things that you're working on, you're adjusting? What are some of the positives? How are you turning the negatives into a positive? If you're inside that camp, what's going on right now?
You know, Darrell Wallace Jr., he's won in the Tampa World Truck Series. He's won in the X Series. So, you know, this isn't a driver that, you know, hasn't really been very accomplished in other series. I mean, this is a driver that he has the marketing and brand power behind him, but he's also a racer. He's also a driver that knows how to, you know, conserve his equipment, to run with the people that he feels most comfortable with, and continue improving his skills. These cup cars are totally, totally different than anything else that he's raced in. I mean, let's just not talk about, you know, Darrell Wallace Jr. Let's look at also like a William Byron. He's a rookie in this series too. Both of these drivers have come from very accomplished racing backgrounds, but you know, we're seeing William Byron kind of in the same spot too, where he really, you know, we've seen a previous champion, somebody that every other weekend, you know, he was winning either in the Truck Series or in the Xfinity Series. You know, he's come into this and it's a whole new ball game. I mean, they've got to learn these new cars, the way that these cars race versus something that they've been in before. And, you know, as a rookie, I don't think that we saw what Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney did in their rookie seasons. I mean, Ryan Blaney won a race in his rookie season. So, you know, those are, again, two very strong drivers. But I don't think no matter who you're looking at, whether it is a Darrell Wallace or you're looking at William Byron or anybody else, these drivers, they're rookies in the series, and they have to gain respect at the same time. So they're racing their equipment the way that they want to be raced. And they also are learning not only just from, you know, Richard Petty and the crew chief and, you know, anybody else around them, or, you know, Hendrick, for example, from Byron, who has a lot of talent around him, like Jeff Gordon that works there, or, you know, you've got Jimmy Johnson who's still in the car. These drivers are learning. They're still in a learning phase. It's early in the season. It's kind of disingenuous to put either of them out at this point. you know, anywhere like a Talladega or a Daytona, you know, Darrell Wallace Jr., who's running very, very well, but even rookies run very, very well sometimes at those places. And it's not really indicative as to how their season will go or how they will do as a driver, because, you know, the attrition rate at some of these tracks, you know, it could put some of these back markers or even these rookies in positions for wins where, you know, other drivers that you would traditionally think would win, you know, are out of the race. So, you know, it going beyond that, every week is a learning experience. There's going to be tracks that both of these drivers are going to go to that they've had not a whole lot of experience on. And that, the seat time and the experience at these tracks as they continue to build confidence, as they begin to come back to these tracks later in the year after they've had some time on them, learning from those people around them, I think we'll start seeing both of them improve steadily over the year. And that's what you want as a rookie, is you want to steadily improve week over week, you know, month over month, you know, we come back to these tracks and things like that. And I think that's really your best case scenario in your rookie season, is to improve, get the seat time, become confident, race the other drivers the way you want them to race you, and build that up into, you know, going to victory lane eventually, or, you know, getting setting on a pole and the other things that really matter in this, you know, in the Cup Series, and become a star.
Well, absolutely. We're talking with Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest. Find him on Twitter at Speedway Digest, your foremost NASCAR authority. And trust me when I say this, you will have more than an abundance of NASCAR information at Speedway Digest. Let's talk a little bit about Kevin Harvick. We've talked about him. He's won three races in a row. That Ford machine, it's got it all figured out. They've got it all dialed in. Now, like you said, the chances are going down that he's going to get more consecutive wins, but at the same time, he is racking up these points. Ford has got it figured out, but Kevin Harvick is not the only one that has a Ford out there. What is it that Kevin Harvick is doing and that Stuart Haas is doing that other teams aren't? And let's be careful in saying this, because I know that NASCAR has a very, 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 very strict tech inspection policy. However, that said, if a team finds a way to get around the system, I'm not saying this. I'm saying things that might be being said on social media, that Kevin Harvick has found out a way to win other than speed. Can we read into the tea leaves? Maybe it's just haters will be haters. But if is there anything to any type of conspiracy theory, so we can squash it now, that Kevin Harvick and Stuart Haas are doing behind the scenes that is getting past tech and is able to win races?
Well, I don't think they've got much, because social media has come out and, you know, the detectives on social media has sure made it very well known as to everything that's going on with any race car that's out there on the track. We're more connected than we ever were. And even Kyle Larson says, this is the day and time we live in. You know, Kevin Harvick was a little bit irritated at the fact that, you know, they the detectives on social media went back and they looked at that rearview mirror and blew pictures up and, you know, started tweeting to the executives of NASCAR or posting on Reddit and these other forums that, you know, NASCAR has traditionally been monitoring over the years. Now, you know, I think we have to have a very fine balance into that, because, you know, somebody has brought up the PGA reference before, where, you know, when there was errors and fouls and, you know, rule breaking during the PGA Tour live televised, you know, these people would start sending emails and calling and tweeting and Facebooking and, you know, everything in between to the sanctioning body to let them know of rules and fouls and everything else that has, you know, gone awry during a competition. And that really came in to bit them in the butt. And, you know, I don't think NASCAR could be into that position right now. They have the equipment on site. They have the live television feed. They have people all the way around the track. The new inspection process. I mean, there's multi layers into this that NASCAR doesn't, in my opinion, really need the social media detectives going out there and pointing out things that are wrong with a car. You know, after the competition has concluded for the weekend, I think it needs to be totally in NASCAR's wheelhouse and unbiased to the fact that if they caught it on their cameras, they caught it in their tech inspection, another official saw it during the race, then yes, those are all what I feel that needs to happen in making sure that these drivers are, you know, on a level playing field. We all know that's not true, and I'm just going to point that out. Every team pushes the gray areas of the rule book in all kinds of manners. Sometimes they're caught, sometimes they're not. And sometimes there's a kind of a in-between on whether we penalize somebody or we let these things go. And, you know, as long as NASCAR is making the decisions, as long as NASCAR is using their resources that they have available, I think that's where it needs to stay. And I'm all in favor of fans and everybody else out there pointing things out. But at the end of the day, it's, I don't think that's where we need to start looking for answers at. But back to Kevin Harvick. Stewart Haas Racing last year announced very, very late that they were going to make that switch, or in 2016 they were going to make the switch over to Ford for the 2017 season. They were contractually obligated to Chevrolet until that point. They had no way of getting resources in hand from Ford because of those contractual obligations. So they had to learn the process of Ford. They had to get and build cars. They started building cars on their own, where they traditionally housed that out to, you know, Hendrick Motorsports and their engine shops and things like that to prepare the chassis. They have a whole year under their belt of building these cars, working with the simulators and shakedown rigs over at Ford. The Roush Yates power that, you know, that is being produced in the engines. I think, you know, over the year they've learned a lot of things, and they've learned a lot of things very, very quickly in the Fords that they're out there and putting on the field. So I think that's one thing you have to look at. You have to look at the fact that everybody, Tony Stewart hires the best people available in the business. And I think it's a testament to them building this team up, learning the system very, very quickly or more rapidly than you would see somebody else. And even the powerhouse teams of late. And it just gives them now the competitive edge over your Hendricks, over your Joe Gibbs Racings and, you know, your other drivers, your Penske's, for example, you know, all these powerhouse teams. Stewart Haas Racing has definitely learned very quickly, and they put this to good use. And I think that's what you're also seeing at the same time, pure driving ability, because not only is Kevin Harvick doing better this year, Boyer is doing better. Eric Almirola now has three top tens. Everybody in the Kurt Busch has consistently been in the top 10, all these drivers, at Stewart Haas Racing, and not just Kevin Harvick, are doing much, much better than they were last year. And I think that, again, just comes back to them learning, them going through the process, them having a year under their belt of notes and data and all the things that come along with it, and they're putting it to use competitively, a track and information sharing between teams.
We've been talking with Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest. Steve, we appreciate you joining us. For those that might be wondering, as far as our live feed goes, we've had some issues. We lost our live feed. So a lot of this has been on the podcast, but we'll have our live feed back at 10:30, and we'll go into our balance extra. So some of this you guys caught live. Some of it you didn't. You're catching on the podcast. If you're listening to the podcast, you're not going to notice any difference whatsoever. We appreciate you hitting subscribe. But if you're listening to us live, I'm not sure where we lost you at, but we did lose our live feed. We will have it back at 10:30, and we'll run a little bit extra because of to make up time for that. But certainly download the podcast if you've not done that, and you'll catch all of this interview with Steve Wilson. Steve, we appreciate you joining us today as NASCAR finishes up their West Coast swing. Let me ask you this: is your bracket still intact? I know you're in the balance. I know you're in the balance group. Is your bracket still intact? I haven't had a chance to look at them all yet.
Yeah, well, that started yesterday. I had 95% of all games picked correctly. I only had one loss after yesterday. I mean, at that point, I picked Virginia, so I had them going almost into the Final Four and then getting beat out then. So, yeah,
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. You have yourself a good race weekend, sir.
All right. Thanks a lot. You take care.
Thank you.